Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Dan Aronson, and you have tuned into Press One for Democracy. Welcome, welcome, welcome all. It's a little bit of a hard one for me. My beloved Blackhawks are busy battling it out for the Stanley Cup Championship, and I am being the good, dedicated coffee party radio host showing up here and hopefully entertaining you for the next 60, 90, or 120 minutes, depending on you, of course, because, as always, this is a call-in show. And we rely on you, the call-in listeners, to carry the show. So nobody wants to sit here and listen to me talk for 60 minutes, so I'm going to try my best again to entertain and to be more of a mediator for you, the people, because that's what this show is all about. It's about bringing your voice to the air. It's about getting our grievances out. It's about having civil, fact-based, transpartisan, i.e. coffee party, discussions on the topics of the day, and trying to find our middle ground, our common ground, not necessarily our middle ground. It could be on the left, could be on the right, could be out in Pluto. Does it really matter? If we find common ground, that is where we start. That is where we can plant the seeds of harmony and trust, and where we can get over this deep-seated hatred that many of us seem to have for our political opposites these days. So that's what the show is all about. So come to the show, bring your ideas, bring your suggestions, but always remember, bring your solutions, because complaining for the sake of complaining, a lot of people like to do that as well, and that's really not going to get us anywhere. So again, welcome in. You reached Press One for Democracy. It is a call-in show, as I mentioned, and so to call in and be heard, the number is 646-929-2495. And when you come into the queue to get onto the radio and let your voice be heard, you simply press 1, which is, again, what this show is all about, pressing 1 for democracy. So one man, one vote, one man, one voice, one man, one woman, one vote, one woman, one voice, of course. Your voice should be heard, and it should be just as important as any other one voice, even if that one voice is a multi-billion-dollar conglomerate that likes to throw millions and millions of dollars at elections and trying to methodologies of trying to exercise undue influence. And what is undue influence? Well, it's real simple. As soon as you're trying to exert more than your one voice's worth of influence or one vote's worth of influence, you're now really you're exercising undue influence. And that's what, of course, is on the top of the coffee party hit list in order to get rid of said influence. So welcome in. So what are we going to talk about tonight? So kind of had a little melding of topics that I wanted to go into tonight, as the blog post or the email blast hopefully alerted you to. So we're going to talk about a couple different things. They're really quite interlinked, right? So we are now heading into the back half of the first year of the Obama reelection. And of course, there were a lot of people that were yelling and screaming, and rightfully so, about the atrocities that were being not necessarily committed, but actually legally invoked by the Congress, legally signed into law by the president, and not necessarily screamed or yelled about since basically 2001, since we watched the towers fall. And you know, the Patriot Act, FISA, NDA, et cetera. But throughout time, we've had certain Americans that have stepped to the fore in great peril, placing themselves in great peril, in order to alert the rest of us that, hey, something's going on in the government that probably shouldn't be going on. Lately, of course, now we've had the NSA basically spying scandal come out, to where we all found out that our communications, especially our electronic ones, are being monitored on a regular basis. And you throw that into the mix, and on top of what a lot of people think are consistent use of illegal drone strikes, and all of a sudden, what we see is a 12-year pattern of corruption within the government, in order to, with the express purpose of expanding its powers. And of course, the government can only expand its powers. It's a zero-sum game. It can only expand its powers at the price of the people's personal freedoms, right? So, in the whole wide world of freedom, you have think of it as a Venn diagram. You put it up there, and you have, it's just one big circle. That's freedom. It's ultimate freedoms. And then government comes in and says, well, we have to kind of limit freedoms here and there just so we can get along as a society. And I might have to impose something on the people in order to advance the society as a whole. I might have to create laws. I might have to impose taxation so that we can build a shared infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, slowly but surely, as the government progresses and becomes larger and larger and larger, each time it does, and each time it stakes a claim on more of the land, it's pushing the people farther and farther out to the outside. So now think of a smaller circle within the bigger circle, and that smaller circle at the center represents government. And as it expands, there's less and less room for the people, because, I mean, where are you going to go? We have shores, we have physical boundaries. Unless we're going to pack up and move to a different country, there's a finite amount of room, there's a finite amount of resources, and there's a finite amount of freedoms to be had. And every time the government expands, of course, we're losing some of ours. So one of the people that I had talked about today was the gentleman who came out and exposed the Pentagon Papers. It was the first big time whistleblower, in my estimation, on government. And a lot of people are questioning his motives, and they're questioning the results that came from his actions, right? So, you know, the question is Daniel Ellsberg a patriot hero, or is he a traitor, right? And then you go back into that idea of, and again, I hate to use it, but because it got so overused at the 9/11, during 9/11, but the question, the question posed by, or I guess it was more of a statement posed by Benjamin Franklin was, he was willing to give up freedom for security deserves neither. And excuse me if that's a slight paraphrase, but I mean, that's the idea, right? If we give over power, every time we give our power to the state to become free, the question is, are we becoming more secure? And what is the value? We have to look at that as a value proposition, right? So, are we really more secure than we were on 9/11? After the Patriot Act, after NDA, after FISA, are we really more secure, right? Are those people, those detainees that are being held in Guantanamo Bay right now, the ones that President Obama claimed in 2008 he would free within a year of being elected, who are still there, are those people the bad mans? Did we capture and actually imprison, hundreds of Osama bin Ladens who would surely have wreaked havoc and death and destruction on America? Or are they, they're bad guys, and maybe they would have been part of something, but they really weren't mastermind. We'll never know, will we? Because they're in there. They're never going to come to trial because that's what the law says. They don't have a right to a lawyer. They don't have a right to even visitation by family. And so they're totally cut off. Who knows? There could be 100 innocent men sitting in Gitmo. We'll never know it. We'll never know it. And so the question is it worth it? Is it worth it? Do we really actually feel safer? And is it worth what we've given up and what we apparently continue to give up, sometimes knowingly, as we did with the Patriot Act? It was, like I said, a legal act. The Congress deliberated. Congress voted in 2001 overwhelmingly, and 2006 not as overwhelmingly, but still out of a strong bipartisan passing of the reaffirmation. And then again in 2011, again not as strong, but still with a bipartisan vote. In fact, there were not enough, and this is one of the myths that I always love to dispel. Everybody says, oh, that's all about the Republicans. Well, no, it's not. It's not about the Republicans, because the Republicans only had 196 votes, and it took 202 to pass. So the Republicans needed help from Democrats. So without the Democrats' help, if it would have been a straight partisan vote down partisan lines, as we see very, very often these days, the Patriot Act would not have been reauthorized in 2011, and we all be, I think, breathing a bit easier. Well, at least I would be. You know, as for me, it always comes down to one simple thing when it comes to these kinds of discussions, and that is, I would rather live in fear of my enemies than my government. Because my enemies, yeah, you know, of course they could be amongst us, and they could be lurking around the next corner, and I may or may not know it. And, you know, there's always, within a free society, it's a lot easier for them to operate. But I think I'd rather take my chance than to think that people that are my next door neighbors and millions of federal employees, I never know which one of those guys are you know, listening in. I'm sure they're listening into the show right now, and maybe some of the things they're saying, I'm maybe there's an FBI file being created right now. Dan Aaronson, that dissident, the seditionist, who says that these things are abominations. Could be, I don't know. But I do see area code 620 waiting patiently on hold, and I believe this would be Mr. Jack. Mr. Jack, how are you doing this evening, sir? Your mic is open.
It's Jack Golden. It's Jack Golden. Can you hear me?
I can, Jack. Always a pleasure, sir. How are you tonight?
Okay. Fine.
So where do you stand on this freedom v. security thing?
Well, it's hard to say. I do not sympathize with what's his name, and Nordstrand or whatever his name.
Who's Snowden?
Nordstrand or what?
Snowden or
no?
Okay, you might be
Nordstrand.
Talking about a different guy. I mean,
yeah, I don't agree with him. He's a Tea Party anyway, and I think we're making too much of an issue over this. It should go on to doing the doing the whole
Boy, Jack, I wish I could help you out.
Okay.
There's a long list of things that need to be addressed, so I can't guess where you're coming from.
The jobs issue.
Oh, jobs. Oh, that's my favorite. That tops my list every day and twice on Sundays.
Yeah.
But isn't it amazing how nobody's talking about a Jobs Act, how nobody's talking about how we can restructure government?
You have to get around these Republicans. And the thing is,
name a Democrat that's brought a bill to the floor within the last 6 months that says we are going to increase spending and we are going to on infrastructure, and we're going to create jobs, good middle class working jobs. Name a Democrat who's bill to the floor. Name a Democrat who's even spoken about it. Who's given a speech about it?
Nobody. I think the Democrats are a bunch of pussies, especially Harry Reid. You don't want to do the nuclear option on immigration or guns or whatever needs to be done.
Harry Reid voted against background checks. 90% of Americans were for background checks. Harry Reid, Democrat, voted against them. It's To me, it's
because
it's, they're all the same.
He's a member of the National Rifle Association. He owns guns or something like that.
I think that's something wrong with just owning a gun,
he can own one gun. He can own one gun. You can own one gun. It just has to be a shotgun or something like that, and it can't be a 100 clips or rounds and all that. Yeah.
You know, those are all reasonable, Jack. But first and foremost, let's get background checks. Let's make sure we're not selling mentally ill people guns. Let's make sure that we're not selling lifetime criminal guns. Let's do the background check. It's the first step. Then you can go ahead and you can start talking
background
about
checks and then illicit
stuff.
But 90%
of Americans wanted background checks, Jack, and they said no.
Struggle. So that should be sayonara. That should be no good.
Yeah. Absolutely. I totally agree with you. 518-724, I see your hands raised. We will come to you as soon as we're done with Jack. Jack, I'm all for putting people the guns to work, but let me ask you a question in closing, sir. Do you, with the Patriot Act, with NDA, with FISA, with the snooping that's going on, real simple, Jack, do you feel safer than you did on 9/11?
Well, it hasn't affected me directly. I've done Facebook, and I've done just a matter of you just don't get involved in those games and whatnot.
Well, okay, let me ask you a different question.
Do
you think that those laws that have been passed have made it less likely for America to be the victim of another terrorist attack?
That I don't know.
Yeah. If you don't know, I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb here. If you don't know, if you can't say for sure that we have given up all of these rights and we don't know whether we're safer, I'm going to say that's a failure. I'm going to say those laws have failed to do what they're supposed to do. I mean, that's just me.
Okay.
All right, Jack, always a pleasure, sir.
That came real quick, and I appreciate that. And the thing that reform the tax code, and do infrastructure and jobs. That's the two priorities they need to do.
I am with you 110%, Jack. Those are the top priorities. We need to get the middle class back to work. We need to unenslave the lower class by raising, and we need to raise the minimum wage.
Minimum wage to $10 an hour.
And here's the thing, Jack. As we talked about last week on the show, every single one of those issues that you and I just talked about, the majority of Americans are for all of those. Somewhere between 66 and 80% of all Americans, depending on those things.
You to think that the majority are not for that. They're talking about. Yeah, you don't believe a word they say.
Yeah.
Don't believe a word they say, particularly Paul Ryan and Fox News and all of that stuff. I'm sick of that.
I'm with you, Jack. Listen, sir, always a pleasure. You have a wonderful night. Feel free to stick around. You can hit one and lower your hand. You hit one again, you can raise your hand. We'll get you right back in. Jack Golding I'm going to go on the map here. He's in southwestern Kansas, a regular caller to all the shows. I love Jack because Jack says he's got all the answers. He says that up front, I've got an answer to all the problems. And you know what? He does. He brings those solutions, and that's what this show is all about. That's what we love. 518, I'm opening up your mic. Who do I have the pleasure of speaking with?
Dan, Joe Pomponio in Albany, New York.
Hey,
how are
Joe,
you?
Joe, Mark, Dan.
I'm up in Albany, Adirondack Mountain area. You got a good topic tonight. This is one I'm sharp on. The reason for that is I've been after this for 12 years. I'm frankly amazed that people are upset now. This really, I find a lot of this a total joke. But, you know, hey, it's been brought to the forefront, finally, in the middle of a whole bunch of other tragic things going on that we need answers for. So, I mean, look, I looked into this. All right, now, number one, the government is not listening into your phone calls. Private corporations are contracted by the government. The people working for them are operating under U.S. security laws, but they are not federal employees, okay? If they were, this guy would be in like the Manning, okay? And unfortunately, I'm not going to take sides in that, but he's under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And individuals that haven't served in the military, I have. I had a secret security clearance, okay? Believe me, you know not to disobey or you will be punished. And there are remedies for you to address your grievances. Now, to get onto the private corporations, they're the ones expanding, not government. They started out making $1 billion a year when this thing began, okay? Their budget is now over $6 billion. Now, and out of curiosity and knowing how much I don't like money in politics, I'm wondering who those corporations give campaign contributions to under Citizens United. You know, this is something I'm working on it. Bose Allen is headed by people that used to work for government. Now, regarding Mr. Snowden, jury's still out on this guy. There's a lot of stuff still coming out, and a lot of the information he's releasing has nothing to do with U.S. citizen surveillance. So, he better be careful there. But I will say this. His least concern is the federal U.S. government. His main concern are the people that have shareholders or big stakes in these security firms, okay? They're going to lose a lot of money if this stuff starts going back under government control. And not for nothing, my mother was a Sicilian, and some people, when it comes to money, and, you know, they have establishments all around the world, that is something another government can't protect you against. So, you know, if I could get word to them, a word to the wise, okay? Turn yourself in or vanish. Now, with regard to do I feel more or less secure, which should be the actual answer, I feel secure. I never felt insecure. When, you know, the previous administrations were screaming to check my bed for terrorists, and I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a real joke. Okay, yes, there's a serious threat out there, but it's a cyber warfare threat. If I could recommend, there's a video out, you have to buy it, Brad Meltzer's Decoded, right? It's called Mafia Alive. Now, the mafia part endeared me. The alive part, when you get into it, you're going to find out the drug cartels, all major crime outlets are so far ahead of us in cyber warfare, all right? They buy people. Everybody has a price.
So hold on, and let me try to do something here, because you've made a lot of salient points. But it's funny because what appear at first to be three or four different kind of random points all of a sudden start taking shape. And in my mind, the more you talk and the more you bring up these other things, there's a definite shape taking place here, right? So we have big business and the government, and it's really hard if you try to put those two next to each other, it's really hard to see where one starts and the other begins, right? I mean, it's just so blurred. And right? And then you started talking about drug cartels and the bad guys, right? The bad guys, I mean, and even the cyber hackers, some of who do really nasty things, some of which you are playing around. But, yeah, they'll always be way ahead of the government. So now the government has to go back to its buddies in big business and say, hey, I can't handle this. You've got to help me with this. And if you do that, I'll just be more indebted to you, right? And then you have the drug cartels laundering money through HSBC through Wall Street,
and
we know that Wall Street, and we know Wall Street runs is you know in the government. We don't see where one of those ends because there's a revolving door between K Street and the Congress and Wall Street. So there, all of these lines have been blurred, and what you have is this, it's a hydra, right? I mean, you have 16-headed monster. Each one of them does its damage, and if you cut one off, three more pop up. What are we? You know what? I just talked myself into selling all my stuff and going to Belize tomorrow. How do we beat this?
Oh, we were engineered into it, I believe. Now, if you want to talk about a real genuine whistleblower, outside of the ones that I watched get locked up because they wouldn't serve in a war they felt was illegal, we can move over to 1999. I know people love blaming the president for this. This seems to be the ongoing thing. So blame the president. 1999, Thomas Drake, just lightly, okay, blew the whistle. He worked for NSA, okay? There's a video on it. There are several. If you Google it, you'll find it. In effect, they locked him up for it. But he stood his ground, okay? He won. He's not in jail, okay? Now, with regard to Daniel Ellsberg, I was in Vietnam when that happened. When I came back, I read the book, okay? Had I read that book before I went, I probably would not have enlisted, all right? But he did not. Move to an adversarial country, and before doing that, move money there and learn the language of the country. I used to do investigation work. That really, raises eyebrows to me. Yeah, all right, yeah, look, I'm a 29-year-old high school dropout. Well, I tell you something, a 21-year-old high school dropout, you're pretty clever. If you can land a $122,000 job in Hawaii as a GED graduate, you got to be more than clever.
We know that school isn't the be-all, end-all either, and we know that there's a lot of – I mean, Bill Gates was a dropout of Harvard of a grad school. We know. I mean, so you find those. And 724, thanks for holding. We're going to come to you in a few seconds. But you know what's interesting, Joe? Right before the show, I looked up on Wikipedia a list of the people who have been convicted for treason in this country. And, yeah, I mean, every one of them, I mean, pretty heinous, right? I mean, like Tokyo Rose and Axis Lily and people that let's see, who is this guy? Herbert Hans Haupt, German-born naturalized U.S. citizen who became a German spy and fed Germany tons of information. I mean, these were war criminals, right?
Yes.
That did horrible things. And oddly enough, I was actually shocked to find out, and I had to do a little bit more digging, was that the Rosenbergs, who probably were the worst, passing nuclear secrets to Russia, actually were convicted of conspiracy to commit espionage. They were not charged with treason because... and that was a McCarthy doing, and there's actually questioning. There's actually still a question today as to how much real hard evidence they had on him. But I mean, all I'm getting at is that these people did harsh, hard things to assist our enemies in times of war. To blow the whistle on an American wrongdoing, how can that possibly be even considered in the same ballpark as the heinous nature of the crimes that these other people committed that were charged and found guilty for treason? It's not even in the same ballpark.
It would depend on what else you took. See,
if you're making it public and not selling it, then how can that be bad?
More than he's releasing. Mr. Greenwald said that. I talked to some ITs. There's an SSD chip I have on my phone. It's 164 gigabytes. How much information can I get on that? And if I'm in an adversarial country with a potential war brewing in a area of the world with people that are of the terrorist nature, and this program is being used to find the terrorists, how much money do you think I could get for it? Now, I'm not pointing
fingers. I agree with you, but I agree with you, Joe, and I'm going to put you on hold. I want to come back to you, but all I can say is this. The mere opportunity to commit a crime is not a crime in itself. Yes, he might have the wherewithal, but until you find out that he's handing that stuff over to our enemies and they're benefiting from it, not even they're benefiting, he's handing it over to our enemies, yeah, then he's guilty. But, I mean, until you see that, to me, if he's going public with it and he's pointing out the wrongdoing within the government, I'm not sure. 724, who do we have the pleasure of speaking with? Your mic's open, and thank you very much for being patient and waiting.
Hi, Dan. This is Greg in Pittsburgh. How are you?
Greg in Pittsburgh. I am good. How are things in Pittsburgh?
Doing well. Really interesting conversation tonight. Lots of timely topics, as usual. I guess the thing I was thinking about this whole time was how we define and distinguish between what we would consider to be a whistleblower and a traitor. And a lot of the things I've been reading in places like The New Yorker, The New York Times, other what I would consider to be reasonably reputable sources, it seems like the debate around Snowden is whether or not he exposed an unlawful wrongdoing or whether he simply exposed what it amounts to be a perfectly legal activity that the government has undertaken. And what I think that really speaks to is the deeper issue of what we've been talking about tonight on some level, and that is how much power are we really comfortable in having our government have? And to Joe's point, and I kind of touched on this in a blog that I wrote when this first came out, if you think you have something to worry about with government officials, understanding what your digital life looks like, you ain't seen nothing until you understand what corporations know about your digital life. And that's where the real data is being gathered. That's where your access to information is really being manipulated. And in some ways, I don't want to sound hyperbolic, but that's where the real threat comes in, is when the corporations and the government kind of work together to understand who we are, what we do, where we do it, with whom we do it, and to couch it all in the notion of national security, in some ways is, it's a convenient explanation. And they can make cases all day long about how they have protected us and foiled plots, and yet they can't tell us about it because that would jeopardize national security too, so we kind of have to take it on faith. It does kind of come right back to this subject that the Coffee Party really is centered on, and that is the effect of big money in our lives. And it's not just the influence of money in government. It's really the influence of big money everywhere that really kind of shackles and holds the middle class down and under a thumb that we will struggle to get out from under until we start to think about and elect more people like Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Sherrod Wilson. I think his last name is Wilson. Sherrod from Ohio. The people who really seem to be at least much more concerned with us as citizens and less concerned about corporations.
Absolutely. And I've always got to give a shout out to the two senators from Oregon, and then I never remember the names. My senators. That's like, how horrible is that? But they're both been on the fore of getting money out of politics. The one is a co-sponsor of the latest version of the Disclose Act, and then you see it in like the odd places as well, right? I mean, right now the most proactive push to get money out of politics is happening in Montana, and it is the GOP, the Montana GOP, that's leading that charge. So just when you think you've got, you can make this a red or a blue thing, you find out, oh my gosh, wait a second, You know, and the fact is that right is right, is wrong is wrong. But I think one of the, and I don't know how much of the discussion you heard between myself and Joe, but one of the things that I was pointing out is, and my dog is going crazy, and I don't know why, but one of the things that I pointed out was it's become more, I think, than just money. Now we have this technological partnership, right? Now we have governments who can't possibly stay on top of the technology to the point where the bad guys are. So now they have to go to these private contractors, like Joe said, and hire them because it's like, well, we can't do it, so you do it for us. And we go, okay, well, that's fine. I'm going to do that, but what are you going to do for me? And so it's bad enough that the money comes in election time and in the lobbies, but now it's like they're just an extension of the government, and that means they're an extension of governmental powers, right? And
yeah,
so
absolutely.
That is really scary. Now, and they're just a two-headed monster.
Well, and when you think about the budget, and well, where the money in the federal budget is allocated to things like defense and homeland security, those are the kinds of jobs programs that we seem to be stuck with. It's, you know, the first thing I always talk about, and I admit it, is that before you cut social programs, start cutting the federal or start cutting the military. We don't need to have spending that is greater than the next 15 countries combined. I think we'll be okay if it's maybe only half that size. But when you think about the effect that that has throughout the rest of the economy, you know, this guys like this Snowden who are working for a contractor, people like my nephew who works for a contractor, they're going to be out of work as well. Sequestration is having some effect there already, but it's not anything that people seem to have paid a lot of attention to. I don't think there's any denying we're spending a lot of money. We have a lot of technology. It is in the wrong hands. It's going to be a threat to our liberty on a lot of levels. I'm not a big fan of taking my shoes off, you know, when I go through, you know, the airport security just because one guy tried to light his shoes on fire. You know, kind of where does it end?
That's always the way it is, unfortunately, is we react. Let me tell you a really quick story. You mentioned airport security. It happens. I fly almost every other week. So I've seen a lot of this stuff, and I've been doing it for 20 years. And, you know, I remember when you could just walk on the plane. I remember when my son could, you know, 8-year-old son could come and meet me at the gate. And I remember the good old days. But I was in Toronto once, and I got past the first regular checkpoint of security, and then I get around to where the planes are going to the U.S., and there are people in flak jackets and Glocks, and I mean, you know, the real deal, right? Not the TSA types, right?
Right.
And all of us, right? And so the lady says, she makes me totally empty my backpack, and which is a bad idea. I'm a pack rat. I carry everything in there. So I get through emptying it, and she goes, okay, now take your hands and place them in your pockets. And I said, nope. Okay, so I place it in my pocket. She goes, rub them up and down slowly. And I'm like, okay, now I'm thinking this. I say, where's Ashton Kutcher? I'm being punked, right? And she goes, rub them. And she got mad at me. I was like, what? She goes, rub them up and down slowly. And so I did that. She said, okay, take them out. She goes, now put them on your belt. Now rub them across your belt, around your belt area of your pants slowly. And I'm going, what is this? And it didn't hit me until I had passed and everything was fine. And she takes the swab thing, right, the little piece of cloth with the tweezers, and swabs my hand for explosives, and I'm going, crap, they're looking for exploding underwear.
Yes, that's exactly what
it was. 3 weeks after the idiot with the exploding underwear came in, and I'm going, really, really? Really?
Well, and just like
that's all we do is react.
15% of the federal budget goes to the military. We're always fighting at least two wars behind. There's absolutely no way that Abrams tanks are going to help us to defeat terrorists or even kind of turn the tide socially and culturally with the next couple of generations that we've successfully recruited to become terrorists against us. So the money is being spent in all the wrong places. We're sacrificing some of our liberties by having to walk through body scanners, which, you know, now presumably don't actually show our lovely shapes to people sitting in
rooms. They're being taken away. They are being taken. They're done. They're being taken away.
The whole idea being that, you know, we don't seem to feel secure unless we allow for our elected officials to convince us that we need to live in fear. Somehow that translates into security, that if long as we have an enemy, as long as we're willing to point to the other and suggest that those are the people that need to be captured and held without charges, without trials. You know, Gitmo will be the stain on the Obama presidency, as far as I'm concerned, just like torture will be the stain on the Bush presidency. Historians will look back on us 100 years from now and say, what were you people doing? What were you thinking?
Just like internment camps should be the stain on the Roosevelt presidency.
That's
except
right.
We weren't taught about that in school, were we?
No, we weren't. And now it's impossible for people to hide information. It's impossible, really, for any politician to hide. And back to your question about a jobs bills, by the way, there have been bills presented. If you recall the Obama State of the Union address in 2011, a jobs bill after that in 2013, and just recently another jobs bill for infrastructure that was voted down by the Republicans with some help from a couple of Democrats.
Do you happen to be online?
Yes.
You have access to the chat room. If you want to, when we're done chatting here, if you want to send links to me, I'm guessing when you say voted down, I'm guessing probably in committee, right?
Has any of them made it to the floor? Here's what it says. Senate Republicans blocked a $60 billion infrastructure bill Thursday. Now, this article is dated May 29th, 2013. So this was a couple of weeks ago, I guess. You know what? This was updated May 29th. Sorry. This is actually from the 2011 bill. Sorry.
Okay.
To your point, neither party is doing anything of this notion that there's some sort of a middle ground that they're going to somehow find, that they're going to be able to agree on, it seems so distant. I think it goes back to this issue of where are the politicians' real obligations? They're not to us. Only a very small handful of them feel like they're actually there representing us. They're representing their special interests.
Well, you know, it's funny. I post at 10:30 a.m. on every Monday on what my show is going to be about, and I had the clip to absolutely my favorite George Carlin bit ever, and unfortunately, it was like the last one he ever did. And I don't know if you're familiar with it. I've got it queued up on audio. There's a lot of profanity in it, so I'm kind of going back and forth on whether to play it. But I mean,
I think we're all adults here. I think you should play it while you turn on the chat room, because it's not on right now.
Sure it is. I'm watching it.
I'm not seeing it on mine. I might have to refresh. Why don't you play it, and I'll post a couple links.
Okay. I think it's a good transition moment in the show. Go ahead. I'm gonna go ahead and mute you here, and I'm going to warn everybody, all right? This is George Carlin. If you're not familiar with George Carlin, a brilliant man, had a great way of boiling everything down really commonsensically, but in the end, near the end of his career, he got angry, as he should. I'm angry. But in his line of work, he tended to, especially near the end of his career, use profanity. And this little clip came from the very last, his 13th and final HBO special before, you know, unfortunately he passed away. So there's profanity in it. So if you want to do something for 4 minutes and 20 seconds, heat up some dinner or whatever, you know, please do. But hopefully that's an adequate forewarning of what's about to come. However, if you can manage to get past the profanity, I want you to picture in your mind everything from the internment of 110,000 Japanese in 1942 to 1946, where they had everything taken from them, to what happened after the towers fell, and how we tend to react every single time we're attacked and we're mad and we're fearful. Because I believe it allows the government to do exactly what he talks about. So I'm going to shut up now and enjoy.
Here's one more item for you, the last in our civics book, rights. Boy, everyone in this country is always running around yammering about their fucking rights. I have a right, you have no right, we have a right, they don't have a right. Folks, I hate to spoil your fun, but there's no such thing as rights, okay? They're imaginary. We made them up, like the boogeyman. The three little pigs, Pinocchio, Mother Goose, shit like that. Rights are an idea. They're just imaginary. They're a cute idea. Cute. But that's all. Cute and fictional. But if you think you do have rights, let me ask you this. Where do they come from? People say, well, they come from God. They're God-given rights. Oh, fuck. Here we go again. Here we go again. The God excuse. The last refuge of a man with no answers and no argument. It came from God. Anything we can't describe must have come from God. Personally, folks, I believe that if your rights came from God, he would have given you the right to some food every day, and he would have given you the right to a roof over your head. God would have been looking out for you. God would have been looking out for you. You know that? He wouldn't have been worried about making sure you have a gun so you get drunk on Sunday night and kill your girlfriend's parents. But let's say it's true. Let's say God gave us these rights. Why would he give us a certain number of rights? The Bill of Rights in this country has 10 stipulations, okay? 10 rights. And apparently God was doing sloppy work that week because we've had to amend the Bill of Rights an additional 17 times. So God forgot a couple of things, like slavery. Just fucking slipped his mind. But let's say God gave us the original 10. He gave the British 13. The British Bill of Rights has 13 stipulations. The Germans have 29. The Belgians have 25. The Swedish have only 6. And some people in the world have no rights at all. What kind of a fucking goddamn God-given deal is that? No rights at all? Why would God give different people in different countries different numbers of different rights? Boredom? Amusement? Bad arithmetic? Do we find out at long last, after all this time, that God is weak in math skills? Doesn't sound like divine planning to me. Sounds more like human planning. Sounds more like one group trying to control another group. In other words, business as usual in America. Now, if you think you do have rights, one last assignment for you. Next time you're at the computer, get on the internet, go to Wikipedia. When you get to Wikipedia, in the search field for Wikipedia, I want you to type in Japanese Americans 1942, and you'll find out all about your precious fucking rights, okay? All right. You know about it. You know about it. Yeah. In 1942, there were 110,000 Japanese American citizens in good standing, law-abiding people who were thrown into internment camps simply because their parents were born in the wrong country. That's all they did wrong. They had no right to a lawyer, no right to a fair trial, no right to a jury of their peers, no right to due process of any kind. The only right they had, right this way, into the internment camps. Just when these American citizens needed their rights the most, their government took them away. And rights aren't rights if someone can take them away. They're privileges. That's all we've ever had in this country is a bill of temporary privileges. And if you read the news even badly, you know that every year the list gets shorter and shorter and shorter. You see how similar it is? Yeah. Sooner or later, the people in this country are going to realize the government does not give a fuck about them. Government doesn't care about you or your children or your rights or your welfare or your safety. It simply doesn't give a fuck about you. It's interested in its own power. That's the only thing. Keeping it and expanding it wherever possible.
George Carlin. Speaking, as far as I can tell, the truth. He did it with a lot of profanity, and again, I apologize if that bothered anybody, but, I mean, the man speaks the truth. You know, if a right is, there's a great word that's used in the Declaration of Independence, right, which is where our first rights, where we decided we're going to tell King George, these were our first rights, and the word is inalienable. And I actually wanted to, I actually did this, and I don't know where it went, so I'm going to look it up really fast, right? We have inalienable rights that were given to us by our Creator, right? So what is the word, what is the definition of the word inalienable? And the answer is, it is, this is the answer according to the Bing Dictionary, I'll just pick one, impossible to take away. Impossible. We're all familiar with the word impossible. I don't think I have to explain that one. Impossible to take away. Not able to be transferred or taken away. And, but here's the funny thing that Bing uses. Example, because of being protected by law. Well, that was the idea, folks. That was the idea. Inalienable rights endowed by our Creator. So that's the other thing, right? So how can something God-given, as George Carlin pointed out, how can something God, that God gave you be taken away by a human being? And how can, I mean, it can be, but is that okay? And all this happens all the time. Throughout our history, it's happened all the time. And it happens to us, in my estimation, because we get in these situations where we get angry. We get, like, you know, after Pearl Harbor, who wasn't angry? Who didn't want to go get those Japanese? And I know after 9/11, who didn't want to go get those guys, you know, who didn't want to get, you know, of course, it's a lot harder now, right? Because when we say, oh, we want to get those guys, well, now we're fighting a religious fanatic group that's, you know, all over the world. So it's a lot harder. It's a lot harder to fight wars when you have borders. But nonetheless, we get angry and we go, yeah, and we applaud it when in the Senate, 98-1, they passed the Patriot Act, and everybody looked at the guy from Minnesota who dissented and said, ah, but I, you know, Jerry, yeah, I don't like you, right? And now doesn't he look like Nostradamus? And don't the rest of us look a little bit silly? 404, Mr. Rodrigo, how are you tonight?
I'm marvelous. How are you?
I am on a roll. George Carlin got me fired up there.
Well, you know, it just sounds like you guys are just a bunch of cynical people tonight. What's going on? Nothing positive. Man, I'm telling you. How could you get that way in this world? You know, yeah. and then you pull George out. I mean, you just got us down the cynical road today.
Oh, yeah. I tell you what. Well, let me bring it back to the real reality, and let me bring it back to somebody else. I've got a perfect question for you. This was a great transition. I'm so glad you're here, by the way, everybody. This is Robert Rodrigo, or sometimes Bobby Rodrigo, or on Alberto shows he's Roberto Rodrigo from Accra, Georgia, right outside of Atlanta. You're from Accra, right? Yes.
Well, that's where I live.
On the shores of Lake Allatoona, right? Originally from New York. You know how you New Yorkers love your New York. So,
yep.
Ellsberg, and I hope did you get a chance to listen to the phone interview that Ellsberg did?
No, I did not.
If you didn't,
I'm gonna post it on YouTube. I came in to find you.
Oh, okay. Well, so basically, what Ellsberg says is this is what it boiled down to, right? He said, FISA court is a sham, and warrantless wiretapping, which has been going on for years before 9/11, is a violation of the U.S. Constitution, no matter what law Congress passes. And what his theory boils down to is this. If the Constitution guarantees you specific rights, then the only way to take those rights away from you are to amend the Constitution. You cannot simply pass a law by a majority of Congress signed by the president that takes away something that was given to you, guaranteed to you by the Constitution. And it's a pretty good argument as far as I can tell. You got any thoughts on that?
I do, of course.
I knew you did. It was a softball, man. I taught you a softball.
It really was. No curve to that or anything. All right. In theory, yes.
Just so you know, hold on 1 second before you start answering. So, I'm Joe and Greg. I'm going to open your mics up too. Let's get a little round robin going here. But go ahead, Bob.
Yeah. So, in theory, I agree with it. I've actually said as much about, for example, the Second Amendment. I have said many times on various corporate party radio that I don't like the Second Amendment. And I don't like guns in our society, but I will not support absolute legislation to remove guns, because there is at least an argument that can be made that the Second Amendment allows us to have guns. So I think I would be a hypocrite, whereas I'm always demanding that people look at other amendments besides the Second Amendment. So that's part of my answer. Now, I will also say that, no, the Constitution does not guarantee us rights. It protects rights we already have. And it basically is telling the government, telling us that the government is not going to be allowed to infringe upon that. And that's one of the reasons why when you hear about erosion of rights, one of the staples that they use is legitimate government interest. They do the balancing test. And I always use the example of you can't yell fire in a movie theater as a permissible restriction of First Amendment. Now, not my permissible, but this is a legitimate government interest permissible infringement or restriction on freedom of speech. So this is how most of the time they justify rulings that erode or restrict or lessen, whatever the word you want to use, on something, and instead of giving it a broader interpretation. It's done with the Fourth Amendment immensely. So when we talk about the Patriot Act,
go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I have a question when you're done. Go ahead.
Well, go ahead. Ask it.
So you said something interesting to me that I kind of rolled it around in my head, and then it like came out like, I don't get it. So you said that you made the statement, and please correct me if I'm wrong. What I thought you said was that the Constitution doesn't guarantee you rights, but it stops the government from infringing on your freedoms?
Basically, my view of it is that the founders believe that wherever, inalienable, God-given, of course you could say, well, I don't think I was born with the right to a civil court. You know, I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at that. But the founders believed that what they wanted to do was protect government from taking what they believed to be fundamental freedoms, liberties that every man should have. Now, of course, you say every man, you know, then we can qualify it with, yes, they were elitists, yes, they were rich guys, yes, they didn't, the slavery thing was dealt with, or actually culture, not slavery, culture was dealt with improperly. So when you say man, they didn't consider certain men. But I always say the Constitution keeps running into itself when these arguments come up. And one of the ways that another way that they put these protections there is by creating a balanced government that had a three-sided head, where they're supposed to keep everything in check. They each have a specific job. And what's been going on, for example, with the FISA, the FISA court has been going, FISA has been since 1978. So the Patriot Act, and what's been going on to this, is that they have legitimate government interest, and the executive, which has been doing this since Lincoln, the executive has lobbied the legislature and also the courts, by the basis of arguing on a certain side of an issue, they have lobbied for broadening, for more power. And one of the ways they always get it is in the so-called wartime situation. Lincoln with habeas, FDR with the internment camps and other things. Look at the Depression and what he did with the banks is another thing. When you look at 9/11, you look at FISA back in 78, then you look at 9/11. The Patriot Act didn't really create new law, most of it. All it did was expand already existing law. So it took laws that were already in place to combat these things, and it removed more due process or lessened due process in all of it, which is broadening the executive power and saying, I want to be able to do this without having to get a balancing from the other branch of our government. And that's exactly what's been going on. So it is absolutely true that these things are infringing not only on our liberty, but it is an impermissible expansion of one government, of one branch of our government, and it's being allowed by the other two branches. It's writing a check to them and saying you can do that. Legislature legislated the broadening of the power, and the court said, "Oh yeah, that's fine because it's a legitimate government interest." So You always have that.
Okay.
How's that for now?
All right. Yeah, I'm sorry. I hate to interrupt you when you're on a roll, but we got four other people. And Jack, I have
opened
your
in.
Mic.
Let's go.
Jack, welcome back. Hang on 1 second. Let's let Greg, and I'm sorry, let's let Joe respond, because I know this is Joe's sweet spot as well.
Yeah, Robert, I totally agree with you. And the premise of the law, it could ever be struck down. I got tutored on this in France in 2003. The simple case of the illegality of it, if you could get it before the Supreme Court, is when you look at the law as it was passed, they simply did just what you said. The people signing it never read it. They signed it without knowing what they were doing and then kept supporting it.
Totally don't believe that. Totally don't believe that.
It's true.
I totally believe they all knew exactly what they were doing.
Yep. All right, hold on. Greg, any validity to Joe's claim? That do you believe Joe's claim that they didn't know what they were doing?
No. They knew what they were doing. They didn't read the bill.
Well, how can you know what you're doing if you don't read the bill?
I know, because they had a president and a situation in the United States where all they had to do was say yes. There was a guy on one of the talk shows. He wrote a book about one of the members of Congress or the Senate at that time. And he told them that. And it's not just that. This is an ongoing thing in our government. The staff writes the bill. Okay? They present it. And then they vote on it. They never read it. They didn't even write it.
Sometimes Alec writes the bill.
yeah. Thank you.
Especially on a local level.
Yeah. And that's how that happens.
All right, hold on, guys. Jack Golding. Hold on 1 second.
Yeah.
Jack Golding, your mic is open. You jumped back in. You had something to say. Your mic is open, sir.
Yeah, well, I think you're making a mountain out of a molehill. They're taking about 1793 and all that stuff. You're trying to prevent revolution. That's the whole purpose of the Second Amendment. And I can't see that. Why they want to Nostrin and all that? They want to do away with habeas corpus and that. I think,
that's a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Doing away with habeas corpus?
Did away with that in Lincoln's time.
So exactly. So Greg, are you? Your mic is open. I don't know if you're still with us.
Yes. Yes. I'm here. Very
All
engaging
right.
conversation. I think I'm in partial agreement with just about everything that's been said so far, and that is that we have what I think tends to be a weak leadership elected by a mostly uninformed or misinformed citizenry who is too easily influenced by whatever they see and hear that gets paid for, that echoes whatever their preconceived notions and beliefs happen to be already. That Americans tend to, I think, be a mostly scared populace that gravitates towards the simplistic, doesn't take into account what it's like to really take in the actual facts and information of most situations. And when they go into the voting booths, they're probably, for the most part, remembering what the last ad was or whatever party affiliate they are already subscribed to. And that's why we, it's kind of why we have what we have today. I would like to think, and I wish I could live for another 100 years just to see how things turn out. I'm optimistic. I think we're on a cusp. We're on a threshold. I've got kids that are in their 20s right now, and they look at us and say, "Man, you guys just really effed this up." And We're not going to make the same kind of mistakes you guys did.
Oh, my God.
That's good. I always meet young people who are involved or young people who aren't involved and tell them, you've got to get involved because our generation has messed us up. And guess what? The stuff rolls downhill, and you are at the bottom.
Yes,
you
they are.
Better
yes,
get
they are.
In the game.
Yes,
you
they
better
are.
Get
there
in
are very
the game.
Few. I'm not trying to be too narcissistic here or anything, but the people that are on this phone call are the exception. They're not the rule in this country. We care enough about the issues to actually get engaged both online and even now in conversation. And just think about how few of us there are. It's incumbent upon us to try to do what we can to influence those around us, to not allow blatant lies and misconceptions to go unchallenged, to force people to back up their claims with actual facts from reputable sources. You don't get to come to a conversation with me citing Glenn Beck and The Blaze. You just don't.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
If you are going to come to the conversation citing Bill O'Reilly, you get to sit at the kids' table. You don't get to sit at the adult table. And on some level, you have to be just a little bit, kind of even pompous about it if that's what it takes. I had this conversation with my own in-laws this weekend. Like, you know what? If you think killing Lincoln is a historical record of what went on in the Civil War, there's very little for us to talk about when it comes to the Civil War.
I believed hook, line, and sinker factually that it was the Lincoln vampire slayer thing. That's what I thought really happened.
I thought it was zombies. Was it vampires? I thought it was zombies.
No, Abraham Lincoln vampire slayer.
That's the only way that you can explain the South to me. So I'm all about it.
But here's the sad thing. It came out right at the same time as Lincoln, the serious movie about Lincoln. I'm almost scared to see which grossed more.
No, it's not. You don't want to know the answer to that question.
Let me tell you, Joe, you
got something for us.
Hold on, Bobby.
Hold on 1 second.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Jojo. Yeah, I can tell you guys, I'm not as good as Egberto as this. I don't know how he does it, but you guys are all awesome. So hang with me. Go ahead, Joe.
All right, Greg, you're right. I think we really have a good thing going here. Greg, if you were a corporation, not only would you live for 100 years, all right, you'd live perpetually until there was no country. Citibank runs an ad bragging about it. Now that's something to think about, because we're all going to go, yet they're going to carry on with their personhood forever. Who do you think has a better chance of shaping and molding a civilization or a country under their rule than someone like that, something that never dies?
Yeah,
that's a scary thing to me.
Right. And the 0.01% of individuals who will benefit from that and bequeath that benefit to their progeny, while the rest of us kind of struggle along in a middle or lower middle class or impoverished existence.
Well, I don't think they'll impoverish us. I think we'll be like serfs back in the 1500s, 1600s in Europe.
What were they complaining about? They had dirt to farm and potatoes to eat occasionally.
We don't have dirt to farm in anymore. That's right.
We don't even have dirt.
It also begs the question: Will be serfs like the serfs under Marie Antoinette, and eventually say, "As enough is enough," and then things are going to get ugly?
I would tell you that when somebody starts to complain, I was reading some of the posts on the Coffee Party Facebook page tonight, and somebody made a comment about, if we're not careful, the United States is going to start to resemble Paris and London. And I thought to myself, you're darn right. And, on some level, this country better get its head out of its ass. And, you angry white guys are the ones who better start getting your head out of your ass first, because guess who they're coming for?
Yeah, exactly. So, guys, I want to do something really quick. I'm going to go ahead and close the mics because I got to do my little spiel here for the coffee party because you guys gave me the perfect transition, especially Greg. If you like what you're hearing out there and you're not, for whatever reason, a member of the coffee party, and I can't imagine you are or you're not, then please understand that the coffee party is member driven. We do have a lot on our plates, including the 535 program, where we're going to get everybody in Congress and the president to go on record saying exactly how they feel about money in politics and what their plans are, if any, to get it out. And we're going to create a big database and make that public. And then we're going to go ahead and repeat that over and over again with different issue topics that we like. We have three brilliant coffee party radio shows, and I'll let you decide what you think of this one. But we do have four coffee party radio shows every week. You've got this one, Press One for Democracy. We're here every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with Dan Aronson. That's me, your host, and a cast of thousands of wonderful callers that make it the great show that it is, at least the great fun that it is for me to do it. On Tuesday nights, we have Eric Beiler and Michael Charney, a little bit left, a little bit right, getting together and finding the middle ground. And that starts at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Tuesday night. On Thursday, and I wonder if she's still trolling the boards, do we have Janine Loudon, who I at least saw popped in here for a while. Janine, besides being the executive director, is the host of Lunch with Loudon, a fun 60-minute show that she usually does with co-host Debbie Lynn Mulino, who is a consultant to the party. And I will tell you, this machine that is the coffee party would not run without Debbie Lynn's constant care, attention, and oiling of it. So yay, Debbie Lynn. And that's 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You get to Lunch with Loudon if you're either eating late or if you're on the West Coast where it's noon. And where Debbie Lynn and myself and Janine all hang out in wonderful Oregon. And then on Saturdays, we have Egberto Willis, our resident rabble-rouser. I love Egberto. He's always one to stir the pot. Egberto does Politics Done Right on Saturdays. It starts at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. No, that's not right. I said that. I apologize. I'm sorry. No, I did get it right. So you never doubt yourself, right? At 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you get Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis. So if you are not a member of the party for whatever, please join. If you are a member and your feelings particularly flush at any one point, there's a couple of ways you can donate besides becoming a member. One of them is our new campaign called Free the Elected. And if you go to www.coffeepartyusa.com, you can click on the Free the Elected Free Elected tab, and you come to the campaign. And what we're doing is any donation that's made, we will match it with a restaurants.com gift card, which is good for restaurants around town. And to find out your local restaurants that participate, you can just go to restaurants.com, type in your zip code, and it'll show you all the restaurants, and you can use that gift card. And it's a dollar-for-dollar match. So if you give us $50, we give you a $50 gift card. If you give us $100, we give you a $100 gift card. If you give us $1,000, we'll give you a $1,000 gift card and a big, big hug. So please, however you feel like becoming a member, becoming a sustaining member, becoming or participating in the Free the Elected campaign, we are in the process of raising a good deal of money to get the 535 platform built and get it out there. So that's the pause for the cause. I want to throw another issue out here. My wife is wonderful. My wife reads the paper on Sundays, and I'm honestly more of a surf the internet kind of guy but she's an old-fashioned print person. And so every once in a while, she tears articles out of the paper, the Oregonian, she throws them at me. This one was especially angering to me. And I'm the last one to know this, but I'm just going to read a little bit of this. This is actually a reprint in the Oregonian from the Washington Post by Neil Irwin. And I'm just going to read the first couple of paragraphs. We hereby present a modest proposal to cut the budget deficit without having either raise taxes or slash any government programs. On the first Friday of every month, the Labor Department releases a report packed with data about how the U.S. job market fared the previous month. Financial markets often make big jumps on the news, with valuations of stocks, bonds, currencies, and commodities sometimes moving by trillions of dollars based on this information. So the plan is simple. The Labor Department can release the report to public, release the report to the public, as it always does, on Friday morning at 8:30 a.m. But traders who want it 5 minutes early can write Uncle Sam a check for $25,000 for the privilege. Of course, getting the information even earlier than that could be worth more. The White House and the Federal Reserve get the report the evening before, so why not extend the privilege to some friendly neighborhood hedge funds for, I don't know, a mere $10 million? And maybe you could have an auction to give some high-frequency trading firm the very first crack at the report, offering it up the afternoon before the release to the highest bidder. They may pay hundreds of millions of dollars. This thought experiment is, of course, triggered by the revelation this week that Thomson Reuters, which distributes the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index, makes the information available to paying subscribers 5 minutes before the masses and hands it to a select high-frequency trading firms 2 seconds before that for even more money. So, ladies and gentlemen, not only do we have this revolving door between Wall Street and K Street and Capitol Hill, but now we have this releasing of information selectively to folks who then turn around and resell it and profit from it. Not the government. Government's not making money doing this. Private companies who are given this information for whatever reason early are now profiting from this. So let me start by opening Jack's mic. And Jack Golding, what do you think of this practice of selling information that should be owned by the public to special interests?
Yeah, frankly, it stinks. I haven't. Yes, we got Nostrand, or I've never heard a guy. That's how he got into the act. Well, that shouldn't be. We need some regulation on that. On not releasing data early like that for $10,000. They can get a report that clears everything up.
Yeah, the amount of money that report is worth, is it can be ridiculous. Joe Pomponio, what say you, sir?
Quite simple. We're a government. We're not a business. I'm vaguely familiar with the practice of releasing it early, and it's some flimsy excuse that the people that give it to is vibrant for the economy, yada, yada, yada. No. We're a government. We are not a business. We're not a corporation, okay? Even Stephen, for everybody out there, the facts aren't, the data isn't collected, the results aren't made for individuals to profit on. They're made to report what is happening with our country.
If we're a business, we're a crappy one because we're not charging for it. We're handing it to these people who then turn around and charge for it.
Stop doing
not
it.
Me. Not you. I don't get the report 5 minutes early so I can get online and sell it. Do you?
No. And that's exactly what I'm saying. We are a government. Those reports come out, and they're for everybody, and they release at the same time. I know about the five-minute rule. I didn't know about the other stuff. Selling it is not, no, it's not, that's not why we're here. You're giving a certain, you're discriminating. You're giving select group of people privileged information, price or no price, over the general public. And they don't have a right to it.
I tell you what. You know what? This is the simplest fix in the world, and I know it. And if I know it's a simple fix, then everybody else knows it's a simple fix. I go to contracting negotiations with companies all the time, other companies outside my own. Every single one of those processes start with, here's an NDA. Sign it, a non-disclosure agreement. It means if you disclose the information I'm about to give you, then you owe me lots and lots of money. So if you give it to somebody early. Here's an NDA. You give it out to somebody else, we're going to fine you millions and millions of dollars. It's pretty simple fix.
There's actually maybe a point of clarification that in this particular instance is kind of important to understand. I just posted a link to an article about this that was in the Wall Street Journal. I had heard about this earlier in the week, too. And if I could, I'll just very quickly pull this paragraph out that will help to perhaps just distinguish exactly what data is being essentially sold here. And the paragraph is as follows. Economic reports from public universities, trade groups, and other non-governmental organizations can move markets as surely as official data from the U.S. government. But unlike government reports, where pains are taken to make certain no one gets them ahead of time, few rules control release of non-governmental economic reports. Unknown to many investors, selling early access is routine. This is a blind spot in U.S. law, said Richard Painter, a former Republican White House ethics lawyer. Groups, he said, should not be allowed to selectively disclose market-moving data to people who pay more money. That is not right. So we're all in agreement that what's happening here gives an unfair advantage to those with the most money so they can make even more of it. But it's important to understand that the data that's being sold is not governmental data. It's actually private data or data that's being generated by public universities. So there is a fine point of distinction here. And what has to happen, in my humble opinion, is that, once again, this is just more evidence of two things. Wall Street cannot be trusted, and they are certainly not regulated to anything close to what's really necessary for, what amounts to, the greatest loophole and scam artists that have ever walked the planet. Those are the people who work on Wall Street. They understand and are absolute experts at how to manipulate laws in ways that will bend them to the extreme to their advantage, and even break them if they can and get away with it, because, at this point, who are you going to send to jail? Citibank? J.P. Morgan? Somebody going to jail? No, nobody's going to jail. They're too big to fail and too big to jail.
Yeah. Mr. Rodrigo.
I'm sorry. There's been a duke on the exchange since it began, and I shouldn't be punished for trying to corner the frozen concentrated orange juice business. I don't know what you guys are talking about. No, I mean, just...
That's why I quit drinking OJ.
You see, I'm really, guys, listen, you gave... I wanted to say something earlier, and you led us right to there, and I'll start it out this way. We all know from our wonderful media the issues that are most prominent that the Supreme Court was deciding this term. And, of course, today... none of those cases were yet decided. So, of course, being the wonderful constitutional diligent person that I am, I prefer to read them all and see what's going on. So I went and I saw with the cases that they were released. And, of course, they got no fanfare, with the exception, finally, of the Supreme Court striking down the Arizona voter registration law. That was an excellent ruling. And it was written by Clarence Thomas, I'm scared to say. But anyway... so, one of the most important things that happened today is right up this subject matter. And you talk about Wall Street, well, I'm going to throw another rich subject to you, and that is the health professions and the pharmaceutical companies. Now, the Supreme Court struck down, or let me give you the background. The Federal Trade Commission approved a patent application by a generic pharmaceutical company to produce a generic drug in comparison to one of the name brand drugs that was recently released. And they have a process that goes on that allows them to say that the patent is not controlled, and please forgive me if I don't use the exact term, but essentially what it's saying is they apply for the patent, and the patent is not controlled what they're doing. It's a generic drug, it gets approved, and of course they get to sell a less expensive version of the same drug. So after the generic company does this, the name brand pharmaceutical company decides to pay the generic company off, so they do not sell the drug they can raise the price to whatever they want to be because they have no competition, and this is what happened. So the FTC, thank God, sued the companies, saying that once they applied for the patent, which of course they must do in order to get into that kind of leverage situation, and this stuff has been going on for years, they sued the company, and of course all the courts, all the way up to the Supreme Court, allowed them to do what they were doing, and thankfully the Supreme Court, on a partisan vote, struck it down, and now this stuff won't be going on anymore. Now, think about what I'm saying here. You have one company who is creating a drug that will be cheaper for us. We all know about what's going on with the Affordable Health Care Act, the pharmacy prices, all this talk about how they have built us for all this money because of the inconsistencies in charging across the street. Two hospitals across the street will charge different prices for the same thing, how they've been doing Medicare. Well, now the pharmaceutical companies have been in bed together, so the name brand ones will give millions and millions of dollars to the generic ones. The generic ones will not put the drug into the street. The prices are controlled. The people who are paying for it is us. And all of these companies are getting subsidized. So when you want to talk about how corporations, and mind you, because of the rule of law in this country that has been established, these corporations are people, protected. And you guys were talking about how they can't get put in jail. Well, you know what? That's probably the one they need to get out of all the rights that they're getting to be able to claim, because they're getting protection granted to them on various cases, and the one that doesn't get brought up is, oh, well, why don't we just send them through due process and put their butts in jail? Because they obviously get all the rest of it, which is why media can lie and all these other things. But think about what's going on here. This is not just Wall Street. This is corporations, period. And it's money, 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 money. Follow the money, and it's going to get to our answers. That is so scandalous, and, of course, we carry the bill. And the government is actually protecting us in that particular instance. I haven't figured out how they got away with protecting us, but that's what happened. And of course, the when you talk about partisan, you've got the right side supporting the pharmacy companies. I don't know how they did that. And you've got the left side going after it. Could really could care less about that. I'm just glad the court did it, because now it won't happen again, at least from the way it's set up in the ruling. And meanwhile, the media never talked about it. Now, to me, that's as important as any Defense of Marriage Act, and don't get me wrong, I think that's important too. But where's the media coverage of that particular fiasco?
Yeah.
That's insane what they're doing to us. They're robbing us blind, pounding us into the ground and killing us. That's exactly what they're. People can't afford the drug because of that little monopoly thing that they're going on, and no coverage whatsoever. It wasn't mentioned at all anywhere that I could find.
You're right.
It's not salacious enough.
There you go.
It's not sensational. The American public can't pay attention for more than 15 seconds on anything.
Well, not only that, but you're not going to get anybody.
But doesn't that make you mad?
Wait, go ahead, Joe.
You won't get anybody to buy ad time for it. I don't know how much you guys know about the media, especially 1% media. This is their dead time of year. Everybody's going to the beach, you're going on vacation, nobody's going to be watching TV. The more sensationalism they have, the more viewers they get. Now, with all the sensationalism, you'd think they would point something like this out while people are listening, right? Your guess is as good as mine. There's so much going on, it's just not important to them.
Joe, you know what I think it is? Is that it takes too much effort to understand what are the sides being argued, what's the actual effect that it has on people's lives. It would take, and I hate to sound like an elitist or something, but it would just take too much time, effort, and concentration when, Dancing with the Stars is on at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be right. You're probably right there. When you're dealing with the viewer.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're dealing with the viewer, because you have to pay attention.
That's why I can't see the Blackhawks.
Yeah, Dan can't see the Blackhawks. Good point, Jack. I'm missing
my voice. Kind of Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, I know. I can't see the Blackhawks on a kind of press on for democracy and this wonderful conversation.
Really?
But let me tell you something. This concept of selling information is so rampant in Washington, but it's not even the selling of information, it's the using of information. And so this conversation, I'm sitting here listening to it, and it took me back to when they modified the Stock Act by a voice vote. It took 14 seconds in the House, took 10 seconds in the Senate, 14 seconds in the House, and when they modified the Stock Act, which is a stop trading on congressional knowledge, right? Because these people get a lot of information, as a part of the lawmaking process. They get a lot of insider information, and in 2011, President Obama was actually able to get through and to where they had to disclose all of their trades. And that way that it could be a lot easier to find out who's doing something wrong. Well, they just did away with the disclosure in a voice vote in seconds. So now these people are free to make tons of money on information. And you know, during the whole Apple thing, while everybody's looking at the taxes, including me, I got into conspiracy theorist mode, right? So here comes this committee, and they're going to call Apple out for this whole tax evasion thing, right? And so here, what happens? Well, let's see. I'm gonna order the guy to come and we're gonna have a congressional hearing. And we're gonna talk all about how they did this. It's gonna make them very unpopular. Stock price is gonna plummet, you know. But then when they get there, we'll open our arms and we'll hug and we'll kiss them, which is exactly what they did. They hugged them, they kissed them, they didn't say anything, you know. There was a few mean comments, but for the most part, it was a love fest. And then. A week later, the stock went right back up to where it was. Now, if I had the power to make that happen and it was okay for me to make money off of it, that would sure change the tenor of the way I held those proceedings.
Yeah, you could attach that to the surveillance corporations that we contract our work out to. You're going to find the same thing. They'll never rein in.
So the issue of getting people's attention around the issues that are really important, the things that really can affect their lives, I can tell you from some experience I've had in the advertising and media business that it is without question all about the eyeballs. And all you need to do is go to the Nielsen website and look at whatever top 10 list you want for whatever time period you want. And for instance, I'm looking at the one for cable network TV from the week of June 3rd. And you've got the NBA playoffs at number one, Game of Thrones number two, inside the NBA playoffs number three, Pawn Stars at number four. There's not even a news program on the list. Pawn Stars is number four.
On the week
of June 3rd, Pawn Stars was number four in ratings.
I think Game of Thrones got a proper rating because I was pissed off the next day from that second to last episode, let me tell you.
So there you have it. You know, back when, and it sounds like we're all of a similar age and generation when, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I think we had four channels that we could choose from, and Walter Cronkite was the most trusted guy in news. Now you have 500 channels, an endless array of choices on the internet, and we seem to be, as a people, and good, bad, or indifferent, made up primarily of individuals who gravitate towards the entertaining and the salacious and don't really, you know, choose to spend a lot of time with trying to educate ourselves. Look at what's going on with funding for education. The whole notion that we would spend less money educating our children, that we somehow overpay teachers? How did we get to that point in the evolution of our society while at the same time, you know, wanting to, continue to provide tax cuts for the absolute wealthiest, believing in this 30-year-old mythology of trickle-down economics? We're still suffering from the Reagan years when it comes to that. it's frustrating. But, you know, if we don't keep talking about it, if we don't keep making the points to the people who have been misinformed, you know, if we don't keep doing what we're doing, we're not going to be able to change things by staying quiet. So that's why I hardly ever do.
Yes, Greg, that's true. But what I think I encounter in my circles is an overconfidence. They seem to have this idea nothing can hurt them. Whatever's happening around them is just the daily routine with government and the world and wars, and they're just not affected by it. And, you know, I find myself sometimes I beat my head against a wall. I mean, I try to deal with a shop steward in a union at a meeting this morning, and I'm trying to explain to them that they want to change the overtime laws. These guys hunger for overtime. I said they're going to offer you leave time instead, and if you don't take it, you can work your normal 8 hours, and you don't get the overtime. His answer, well, they'll need us. I said, no, they don't. They're going to hire an unnumberable, there's no limit on the amount of associates they can hire. They'll use them at a lower pay.
Right.
You know, and they don't get it.
Yeah.
I throw my hands up. Yeah, what are you going to do? You know, they're in this protective state of mind. Where, you know, nothing. I admire the Europeans for the simple fact of their history. All the things that's happened over there over 2,000-3,000 years, they learned. You know, I mean, and in hard times, they found America, they founded America. But we're babies compared to them. Let a plague hit this country. Let 2/3 of the population get wiped out, and maybe they'll think differently about health care.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. Let's hope it doesn't take that. You know, there is something to be said for the idea that, look, if I've got to have $300-$500 a month taken out of my check to pay for health care coverage that, you know, doesn't even really cover very much in terms of what health care costs today when you factor in deductibles and lifetime limits. If instead you're going to take that $300-$500 out of my paycheck and pull that money into a single-payer health care system, why do I think that's a bad idea? I think that's a wonderful idea. Well, why can't everybody have health care? And this notion that the Affordable Care Act is somehow going to create this you know, unwieldy sort of system so that 30 million Americans who can't even afford health care today can actually have this luxurious opportunity to now buy health care. How is that even going to work out? You know, if you can't afford health care today, you're going to get subsidized. Yes, I get it. There's going to be some scaling to it, and you know, people are going to be able to go to an exchange and get a health care program and get subsidies if they can't afford it, and now the insurance companies get even richer? That's a good idea? How come? Why is that a good idea?
I'm with you on single payer.
I'm a big fan of that idea. You know, call it socialized medicine if you want to. You know, that's perfectly fine with me. There are countries in Europe that are getting along just fine and rank higher than us in healthcare under that sort of system.
And they pay less.
Yeah.
They pay a lot less.
Right.
You know, again,
well, we're a country of labels. You know, we love to label things in order to bastardize or promote
vilify.
And the media runs it right through it. You know, the socialized medicine thing is that the word socialist is the big, you know, you start with the birther movement and you go right to the socialist stuff, and it's ludicrous.
Yes.
You know, there's no reason for it. The single payer system is absolute. I mean, you know, I may not agree that healthcare is in the Constitution, but I do believe it is a right for people to have access to get well and to live. I mean, you know, the portions of the Constitution that say life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, duh. You know,
I think it's a moral question. I think it's, frankly,
sure it
I think it's a moral question for our society.
It is a moral question.
It's a moral question
of course
for our society.
If they would get away from the political name-calling and just look at it that way, you know, and of course, to me, the biggest resistance to all of this, of course, is the alleged free market. Well, I just described the free market in that dissertation about that court case. And I went back and I reading it. Actually, I have it up on my phone right now, and I was reading it again, and I'm going, wow, oh, my God, look what they were doing. You know, and they were monopolizing the market to make us pay for, and I don't even know what the drug is. I don't even care what the drug is, except that if I needed it, I would have to pay that much more because they the way they manipulated the market. I was telling a friend of mine who has a kidney transplant about it, and he calls himself a conservative libertarian, and we have many discussions. He's from my neighborhood. We don't know each other that well, but we've been around each other all our lives, and the people that we interact with, and we have grown into a 3-year discussion about the world, and we agree about a lot of things. And he was telling me, because I defer to him a little bit about the medical analysis because of his personal experience, and he was telling me today how, because I showed him this case, and he was telling me today how he has to spend $5,000 a month on these injections that he gets, you know, and I'm thinking, geez, and so I mean so I'm thinking, I wonder if the company is doing the same thing to him.
Yeah,
you know, and how he could be cut off if his red blood cell count is too high, and how he has to live in a certain range because of these rules that they have with the insurance and the problems that he had with the Medicare. You know, I've listened to him for a long time. It is wrenching. You know, because I tell him, I said, listen, I don't sit here to tell you that I know all about this stuff. I just think that giving people access to health care makes sense. And he's a free market guy, and which I am too. Don't get me wrong, but he has this libertarian view where, you know, less regulation means better, and we don't want to use the word socialism. And you know, I just don't get it when he's struggling. And he's not struggling per se monetarily. He makes a good living and stuff, but from the standpoint of health, he's as serious as it gets. You know, a kidney transplant. His wife gave him her kidney, and. You know, it's not as serious as it gets. He shouldn't have to struggle or pay these ridiculous amounts of money for something that is because the pharmaceutical companies or the healthcare professionals wants to set this price, monopolize it, whatever they're doing, not allowing drugs, the alternative medicines and the other drugs to come from across the border, et cetera. This whole thing is ludicrous, absolutely immoral, and I wish that movement would grow as fast as possible.
I've always thought it's easy to be a free market libertarian when you're 19 years old or if you've already got a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Is that the truth?
For me, that movement is all about the heavy lifting's already been done. I get your libertarian movement, but here's what you've got to do. Go somewhere else, off the grid. You don't use the power grid. You don't use my sewer system. You don't use trains. You don't use roads. Nothing that was built was shared infrastructure. You get none of that. And then you know what? Cool. Don't pay taxes even. Good. that's fine with it. It's like they want to keep everything, but now only when that all because all the heavy lifting's been done. But one of those guys drives across a bridge and it collapses because nobody's fixed the bridge in a while. Oh,
they're
going to
blame government. They're going to blame government for that. They'll blame government.
Well, you've heard me say from the economic standpoint that with the way that slave wages are overseas and how we're not getting, and in my opinion, we're not getting those jobs back no matter what kind of tariff or tax structure, because it's always going to, when you can do 100 guys to one, we're never getting at least 75 of those jobs back, in my view. There's just no way to make up that much money unless you raise the wages on the other side. So it limits where we can find new employment. So I have said this before, it's almost as if the government's the last place to do it, so infrastructure has to be the one providing the jobs. And, of course, with the way the governments have been shrinking and then the robbing that they've done of all the pension plans, et cetera, you're creating big government and the burden. But you know what? If there's no other jobs and we need the work anyway, we're not just saying the government create these jobs just to do it. No, we have how many? What is the recent report about the bridges? It's ridiculous on the rating of just bridges in the country that need to be fixed. They have that rating system that they use,
And you could just you can employ 100,000 people to fix bridges easy.
Hey Bob. Those jobs will be back when corporations are completely unregulated, and business can create the cost structure to keep us willing and fighting for part-time minimum wage jobs. I got two kids that just graduated from college.
Yeah.
Neither
right.
of them is full-time employed. Neither of them makes anything close to a living wage.
Right. And, you know, and you know, the if you the wages thing is another area that we talk about a lot. And if you raise the minimum wage to the $9.50 that it was thrown around, that $18,000 a year, that is absurd.
It's absurd.
And
you can't make a living on that.
No, and when they talk about the $9.50 an hour, I always say, does anybody know what that adds up to at the end of the year? Because they're saying, well, look what happened. I says, listen, if you give people a living wage, you know, and you put a minimum wage at the right spot, then you eliminate the burden that is being placed on the government for the safety net aspect, and it gets to be used for the right thing. You know, they talk about big government. Well, we don't, and then they talk about we don't want the government telling people what to do. Give me a break, okay? You've got to have people. You can't have both sides of the coin. So you raise minimum wage.
No. I'm agreeing with you. I mean, it makes no sense. And you know, and as I'm always wont to say, it has nothing to do with the government. Size of government is irrelevant. It's the value we get.
Right.
We don't want
value,
big government.
Absolutely.
We don't want small government. We want
right.
good government. We just get good government. But we can't get that because government only cares about big money. So I tell you what, though. Here's the deal. I got 13 minutes and 45 seconds left in the show, and I am again ready to just commit Harry Carey. So here's what I need. I need you guys to pull me out of this, right? So I'm gonna call you one at a time, and I need you to give me 3 minutes on your best solutions and how we are going to get from here to there being a much better place for the majority of Americans. All right? And I'm going to start with Jack. Jack, give me 3 minutes on how we're going to fix it.
Yeah, well, one thing would be to raise the minimum wage to $10 or so an hour. You won't have a need for food stamps so much either. Secondly, it would be to overhaul the tax structure. In other words, do away with all credits, deductions, exemptions, and filing status. And you can start with four brackets, minimum being 5% for a 10%, a $10,000 exemption for everybody, $20,000 exemption for seniors. Take 5% up to $50,000, and from $50,000 to $100,000 is 10%, and then from $100,000 to $200,000 would be 15%, and then over $200,000 would be 25%. That'd be the highest bracket. I think maybe we should tax billionaires at the rate of 50%. And
there you go.
Yeah.
All right, Jack. I appreciate your input. I'm typing all of these notes into the chat rooms. We are going to immortalize these suggestions. All right, and I'm kind of going in a little bit of reverse order. So let's go with Robert. Go. Fix
without
agreement.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead. Tell you.
Yeah, without question, in my view, it all boils down to money and politics. You've heard me say this before. We must eliminate corporate personhood. We must eliminate and overturn Citizens United or make a law that eliminates it, whatever we have to do. We must remove lobbying from our government, and we must hold our elected officials to a schedule that does not include fundraising during the time that they are working, because, of course, they spend so much time doing that. We must remove ALEC. We must remove any kind of special interest that has a direct line of control into our government. I believe that we should hold the suit, the organizations to the proper standard, to the proper IRS code, so they can. But if we eliminate their access to our elected officials with money, I don't really care what they do after that. Advertising, be damned. I would like to see the fairness doctrine brought back so people can actually trust what they're hearing from the news media, based upon the fact that the news media wouldn't be able to lie anymore because they wouldn't be corporate people. I believe that we need to stay out of the wars. We certainly don't need to be doing anything with Syria. We certainly could cut our defense budget by a third and route the money to be value, as you say. But it all boils down to money for me. No matter what we talk about, it's always about money and monopoly and our elected officials following that path and not the path of the people that elect them.
Beautiful. Thank you, sir, as always. Wonderful, wonderful comments. Who's next? Joe.
Okay. After we get what Robert wants, which would be number one on anyone's list, I would go with number one, let's get the Patriot Act, if we can't get rid of it, get some checks, balances, and safeguards in there for the people that might be abused. I think we could use an infrastructure bank, single-payer health plan system, and a minimum wage, I prefer $12 to $13 an hour, adjusted for inflation. And, you know, you do all that, we'll have a happy country.
I love it. So I'm typing as fast as I can. Infrastructure bank, kill Patriot Act, raise minimum wage. I missed one, I think, at least.
Single-payer.
Single-payer health care, right.
Right, and the minimum wage would be inflation-adjusted. You never have to bother with it again. This thing about having to renew it every so often, it doesn't work to a working person's advantage. And quite honestly, it becomes a bypass thing if you get all the other structures going. When I was in school, I flipped hamburgers. That's not a full-time job. That's a kid's job. We need meaningful work that will give a good income with a good future so people can have lives and children and families, and our society can maintain itself.
Beautiful. Joe, thanks a lot. Great, great comments as well. Greg, you are next. Solve the world, well, at least the United States problems.
What about the world? How much time do I have? I have 3 minutes. Okay.
Not that much.
I want to echo what Jack and Bob and Joe have said. They're obviously all on the same track and the right track. I think there's just huge opportunity for simplification and fairness in the tax code, akin to what Jack was talking about. You got to tax the people who have money. You can't tax those who don't have any money. And it costs money to have a civil society. And the kinds of programs that a civil society ought to be spending its money on is not to build an empire and wage war. That to me is like medieval sort of thinking, actually. We're in a position now where a global economy, pretty much in the way that it's operating now, doesn't require us to have military bases in 140 countries. Just by cutting back on some of that, we have a huge opportunity to start to reduce the amount of money we spend on defense, and as I think it was Bob that said, reallocate that some of that money elsewhere, not just to social programs, but to things that could actually create the jobs of the future. We need to stop subsidizing yesterday's technologies and start helping those businesses who want to create the jobs that will take us into the future. I'm obviously referring to things like clean and green energy technologies. The idea that we still drill holes in the ground to get our energy is incredibly antiquated. It's not even required any longer. All we need is the will to do something different and some incentive to make sure that it happens. When it comes to politics, frankly, I think one of the things that doesn't get talked about nearly enough, if at all, is that politicians ought not to be allowed to hold any type of investment securities while they are in office. None. Zero. Who do you think is getting rich on the laws that are pending and then getting passed? It's the legislators. How many millionaires do we have in Congress? The best way for you to become wealthy is to get elected to office. That has to change. And I would have no qualms whatsoever to saying to anyone who's going to run for office, if you are elected, you are liquidating your holdings. You will have cash holdings for the time that you spend in Congress. You have no vested interest in a piece of legislation. That would be radical. But I think it would help to take money out of politics in a huge way. Because what do you think Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell are thinking about anytime they're thinking about a bill themselves?
Yeah,
they're not thinking about us.
Absolutely. And I don't know how revolutionary it is, because if you travel to partyrecon.org, you'll see that it is the first and most important plank of my platform. Get the profit motive out of Congress. We could try to block the money from coming in, but what if there was no instead of the demand side, the supply side, what if you stopped the demand? What if there was no more demand for money because people couldn't get rich off of serving?
Yes,
then
right.
the money would disappear. Right.
Right.
Here's it. You get $250,000 a year. That's a pretty darn good living, plus expenses to run your office, and with this many staff, and this is it.
And lifetime health care and a lifetime pension. And a lifetime
and
health care. All you have to do is get elected to Congress. You get a lifetime health care and a lifetime pension.
That's actually not true. And I can point you to the website. But that's okay.
Oh, really?
it's actually not true. That one, the GSA.
I'm glad to learn that I'm wrong about that. I'm glad to learn that.
Yeah,
which part of that is wrong, Dan?
It's a tiered pension based on the amount of time you're in. So it's like any other pension.
Oh, no.
Their benefits that accrue based on their service. So the myth that you get elected one time as a one-term congressman and you have health care for life, that's not true. It's not true at all. There's minimum levels you have to serve, and it goes up.
But the pension is there, right?
No.
You can be elected for one term and still have a pension for life, right?
I will find the article and I will post it. But
hey,
for now,
so I'm wrong. Am I wrong?
I believe you're wrong. I know it's not healthcare for life, and I'm 99% sure you're wrong.
Happy to know that I'm wrong about that. And if there's a scale that exists that graduates a congressman or a senator finally into that status, I still think that that's something that frankly I don't understand why they get that just for serving their country. They suddenly now have some sort of graduated benefit that I, as a regular citizen, don't have.
I agree, and that's funny. I was talking to somebody in Oregon who's at the Gay Pride Festival out here, and she's with the she works for the state, and she said her answer to pension problems that state governments and local governments and federal governments have, she said the biggest deterrent is the fact that not everybody has it. If everybody had pension plans, then everybody would get it, and they wouldn't. She thinks most of it's a jealousy thing. So
yes,
I agree with you. Why is their job more important? So, Greg,
right.
Thanks very much. I've got 1 minute here to wrap. I absolutely agree with you. Benjamin Franklin, it was his idea when this was discussed in the original Continental Congress, and they were setting this whole thing up. Benjamin Franklin said, pay Congress, pay to sit in Congress. He said people should serve for the privilege and the privilege alone, and all they should get is a stipend to cover their living expenses while they were in Washington, D.C. That's what Benjamin Franklin said. God bless them. I think our government's become a little more complicated. I think we do have to pay people. But again, you get a flat salary and you cannot make money. And here is the kicker to that. And I think to me it's the most important one. You cannot go to work for any industry that's regulated by the government. And you cannot go to work after you leave Congress. You cannot go to work for any company that receives more than $500,000 in government contracts a year. So no peddling your influence on Wall Street, K Street, and in the private sector. End of story. Then the only people that will go to Washington, D.C. are people that want this country to flourish. I have so thoroughly enjoyed the show tonight. I hope you have enjoyed it as much as I have. I really hope you come back at 9 p.m. on next week and press one for democracy. Thank you for everybody, and thank you for Marianne in the chat room, and have a great evening.